Hey, hockey fans. Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Coming at you live from the heart of Lincoln, America, this is Old School. Sponsored by the Mercado by Certified Piedmontese. Nebraska Football Hall of Famer Jay Foreman and Austin Orman. Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
What up, we're back. Jay Foreman, Austin Orman. Old School, the new school way, 1040 O Street. We are brought to you by the Mercado, Certified Piedmontese, Special Ingredients and Butcher Shop, 84th and Havelock, 30th Yankee Hill, 85th and Andromat, / Old Cheney, 168th and Maple up there in the O. Obviously, we got a whiteboard Wednesday, not a white boy Wednesday. That was done early in the 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock hour. Now we got whiteboard Wednesday about these Utah Utes. We're going to do something on offense and what I think they'll major in against Nebraska. Newly revamped, or hopefully newly revamped, defense coming in the bowl game down in Las Vegas, and the way they played their last game against Kansas, so they won't change much. Now, I will say this, is that they have two first-round picks at tackles. Who knows if they'll play? But they will run the ball. They will run RPO. They will run quarterback counter. They'll run quarterback draw. They'll do a little bit of gap scheme, but that was also predicated on having the five guys to start all season. That might be a lot different. So what they have here, obviously, is how they started, right, with 11 personnel. Now, we'll tell you about their 11 personnel. It's a little bit different. It's a lot different. Number 48 is technically their tight end. He's about 340 pounds.
Woo!
Okay, and then they have a running back, and obviously they have a running quarterback. Then they have a backup quarterback that's a really good runner who's faster than the starter. So you quarterback run game will be a major. They have two really good tight ends. Both of them look like Dalton Kincaid. One's a senior, one's a freshman.
And the other one's 340 pounds. Let's not skip over
then
that.
Then they have the X factor. They just took what the Pittsburgh Steelers have done with Darnell Washington and put it on steroids. But they played against Kansas here. They run a four-man front, 4-2-5, as you see it. If you're looking out here on the screen, four down linemen. They have two guys standing up, but it's still a four-man front. Against 11 personnel, right? You got to the wide side of the field. And so you have a running back up here. And they're going to, I got to get this right here, my bad. They got the running back here, and he's going to motion out here, right? And I will tell you this. When you see any receiver or running back numbers facing the sideline, so I'm going to make this an arrow, he is out of the passing equation. So for as a defensive player, this is just a little bit of nuggets. And when you're watching, then you got to concentrate. For me, I would concentrate on the number two or number three receivers. But they're motioning this guy out, just trying to see if you're in man or zone. That will change what they're going to do as far as their blocking schemes. But then also they're trying to get one of these two guys to move with him to create a numbers advantage. Or make you play 11 on 11. That's the reason why they go no backs, and this is going to be a quarterback run. And it puts a lot of stress on your defensive line. Kansas played this pretty decent. So this is essentially what I call a quarterback G. Essentially, you run a counter and you got a G pull. They're trying to get some movement. They're trying to make this defensive end here, what you'll see in another clip here. They're trying to make him do his job or see him jump out of his gap. Now, he does a really good job of coming down. Wasn't very physical, but he diagnosed the play. He actually was his lack of physicality throughout the timing of the play, only to a 6-yard gain. So this is how they start. They want to see what you're going to do with it. And you look at the next frame here. He's out of the picture. And like I said, his numbers right here are facing here. And he's not moving anywhere fast. The ball is going to be snapped right around here. So when you look at it, when you think about it, you have two receivers in the close proximity. You know, this guy can cover two. And also, you know it's zone because neither one of these guys really moved. And look at this right here. You got the shell right there. So It's zone all the way. That's to keep the eyes on the quarterback for quarterback run. When you're playing against a team like Utah and the way they've played all year, you definitely want to keep your eyes on the quarterback. And so you play a little bit more zone. Gives you a chance to really also come out of your zone and make plays because they run a lot of tunnel screens and obviously wide receiver screens, slot screens and stuff like that off the RPO action. So you keep everything in front of you in theory. In reality, they did not stop Utah. From the very first time that they ran, they went to Wildcat. And this is kind of, this might be it right here. He busted it off for like 60, 70 yards to get the welcome to the game at on the road. So this is what Nebraska should expect. You're going to start out 11 personnel, one back. They're going to motion to the field, to the boundary to see what, how you adjust. And then they're going to run or pass off based on what they see. So the next frame right here, as you see this play declare right here, right? It's like one power G or quarterback G.
And look, we see the G.
Yeah.
He is very easy to spot.
Yeah, so he's pulling right here. There's a big dude right here. He's coming down right here. They're trying to get this guy in a no-win situation. You're trying to get him to come out for no reason. You're chasing a ghost. So he's going to pull and try to kick this guy out here, and it's going to really come right down the hash. Mm-hmm. And it actually ends up being pretty well blocked, and he just – you know, missed this cut, but it has been pretty successful all game long. And when you look at this guy right here, it's 3-on-3 over here. This guy isn't doing anything because if you had a hard corner up here, he would come and block him, right?
It seems kind of like that guy that's on the hash closest to the logo
is
paying attention to him, and the safety's got eyes on the inside receiver.
Right, yep. They're all
that's 3-on-3 at the very least.
It's 3-on-3, but you got to communicate. And you can't just communicate between you three right here. You got to communicate from him to him so he can help in on this run play. So the communication in this case goes top down instead of side to side. And that's how you do, you know, in my opinion, you do a really good job. There's an old saying against RPO, you want to run man, but you got to be really, really disciplined. They're running zone and it actually works out pretty good for them, right? Against Utah, I'd probably feel a little bit more comfortable against man, but depending on what you have on your back end and on eye discipline, zone can be something that you can major in as well, as long as you play well.
And so that seems to line up with what Nebraska wanted to do under John Butler. Right. A lot of man, mix some zone in. We'll see what that looks like under Phil.
Now, you do that when you're winning up front. This is a four-man front, gives you a little bit better chance. As you see this right here, I'll take some of these things off right here so we can get back to where I want to, the point I want is – This guy right here is getting double teamed. He's doing a decent enough job holding the point here, makes things a lot clearer for the two best athletes on the field, which is linebacker. So
they're losing, but they're not getting obliterated.
Right, you're not getting blocked back into your lap. And this guy right here is about to make you some money on this pull on this guard. So you like where you're at, and you can see how tight this runner is to that hash. That's coming right downhill. And they're trying to get somebody to jump out of their gap. He hits the cut, and then you make one guy miss, strike up the band. You know, that's how you get the game started. So it's something that Nebraska's going to see, and they're going to see it in a variety of ways. And you see it right now. You see all the black shirts from Kansas, right? And you see the two linebackers, the play entry here. And there's the runner, right? You got a guy here. You got a guy here. He's corralled, right? This 1-2-3 guys and go to take this back, right? So this is the runner right here.
Hey, hockey fans. Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
And you see four defenders around him, so he has nowhere to go with only three blockers. So it's a good job by Kansas, stopping to like a 4 or 5 yard gain.
Well, and like you said, for a play that wanted to go up the hash, he's right in the middle of the field right now.
And so you won at the point of attack, the one-on-one block and the other frame. That's how you beat RPO. Somebody has to win. Not stalemate. Somebody has to win, legitimately win.
And do it quick. Do it early.
Do it quick, yeah. And they corralled him pretty good. And I wanted you to see the size of their tight end. Okay, let me tell you something. This dude right here, projected first round pick. I think this guy here is also a projected first, second round pick. Those are pretty two, and when you see them play, they're pretty athletic for being 300 pounds. I mean, that they can run gap scheme, they can run pin and pull, they can do whatever they want with them. That's why they're attractive. But let's look at big man right here. Look at the size difference.
That's a tight end, right, folks.
Tight end. There's not a tight end in America with two of those on. Two knee braces and a shoulder and a brace and an elbow brace. Yeah. He's got it all. He's like RoboCop out there. And so there, so it lets you know their mentality, right? And he plays a lot. He plays a lot, man. And he does a really good job. He plays a lot. So I just wanted you to see when it's technically 11 personnel, it's not. Number one.
Can we call it 61 personnel?
Yeah. It's big day. This is goal line with him. Number one's a good running back. Can make you miss. Number four is a running back playing quarterback. Then they bring in number 15, oddly enough. And he's faster than number four and almost as fast as number one. Quarterback running.
Yeah.
And he gets in about the third series and runs a couple plays. Or at least he did against Kansas. So I just wanted to show you that right there, just the size of number 48 here. And just look at him. It's an extra lineman. And they have two good tight ends.
The only thing 48 about him is the number of eggs he eats for breakfast.
Right, right. And that's I was going to say his jacket size, but he's definitely probably like a 60 or so. Yeah, he's a big old dude. And they move the line of scrimmage with him. He's able, and he moves pretty well enough to be getting up to the second level. So Nebraska's got their work cut out for him with these Utah Utes and from a physical standpoint. But I don't think it's anything extraordinary that they haven't faced before. You just got to execute. And this is quarterback run game team.
I was going to ask, what are maybe the similarities or the differences in how Utah uses quarterback run compared to like Nebraska and Taylor Martinez? Maybe the last like
the same. It puts a lot of you saw Taylor was able to give him problems. You saw when UCLA went up there and got worked, and everybody else that played against them, Colorado got worked. You have to be disciplined. You have to win. It makes you play 11 on 11. That's the whole point. And they are both of the quarterbacks and the running back can make you miss and house call it. So there's a very, very small margin for error. And, you know, that's what makes them really, really good. And that's what's made them be very, very consistent, being able to be physical and, you know, obviously, you know, be very well coached on offense. And it's something that works and it travels too. Mm-hmm. And obviously everybody knows their coach is going to retire or step down. And so they're going to be very, very motivated. Now flip to the other side, to their defense. Their defense, I'm going to tell you this, Utah's defense, they are athletic, they are aggressive, and they get off on the ball really, really well. And they do a good job at the point of attack, even though they're not the biggest defense, obviously coming from the Big 12 compared to our league, but they play downhill and they play together. The thing that jumped off on tape to me from Utah is how aggressive they were, but the amount of communication that they communicate pre-snap and then during the season or during the play. Mm-hmm. Very well coached. Obviously, was it Scully going to be
Scally.
The next? Yes, yeah. Scally's going to be the next head coach. He's been there for a while as a D coordinator. So right now they're playing the Texas Tech Red Raiders at home. This is it. This is the coming out party for Texas Tech. Utah is trying to defend their turf. Right here. So you see them right now. They started out in one back, and then they originally broke the huddle, looked like he was in the backfield. They're in 11 personnel as far as Texas Tech goes. This is their running back, or he lined up in the backfield as a running back. So he's not the running back that's playing right now. He's a kind of like a little scat back. So it would be our Mosey.
Okay.
Sure. As you see this right here, there's no fair dodging. This is about to be essentially a dog blitz. So everybody's man to man. No fair dodging. Man, man, off man, off man. And somebody is going to be man to man on this tight end right here. Mm. One free. So it'd be Mike or Sam, dog, one free. That's it. So that's what you're going to get. You're going to get this linebacker that's going to blitz right here. This young man's got the tight end. He's got him man-to-man. So this is where Texas Tech, where we can take it, right? And you think about Dana having some correlation to their type of offense. So how do you defeat man-to-man? They're backed up here. I think this is a third down. They tried to run it, you know, conventionally and got stopped twice. It's third down. They said, okay, we're going to spread you out a little bit. We know you like man pressure on third down, even backed up. I'm not agreeing with this call.
From Tech.
Okay. Because it's early in the game. I think you match up well man-to-man. I think it was probably overly aggressive. I think you can go one hole here, and you'll see why. And a hole defense means that you have an extra defender in the middle of the field. One, it eliminates the quarterback to potentially getting a first down against run game. But number two, it allows you to be really, really aggressive top down with middle help.
Oh, sure. Okay.
In this situation where I'm thinking I need field position.
Yeah, you're backed up. You got a chance to get off the field third and long.
And it's early in the game.
Yeah.
Right? So we want to keep the ball in our hands and keep control of the
field position
and the momentum.
Yeah.
Well, they're man-to-man here with a dog blitz, right? And so somebody has to win and get home, which they have two capable defensive ends. I think it's 0 and number 9, because this is 8.
Yeah.
So in number 7 is their other linebacker. Really, really good athletic guys. Didn't get home here. And this is what I mean by this. They ran a little bit of a mesh route and is essentially an under by this running back here, right? It with the tight end going vertical. But watch what happens here. This is how you beat it, right? They're not even looking to the wide side of the field. When man to man here without motion, right? They're looking for matchups. They're looking for a way to find a way to get to this part of the middle of the field, because that's where explosiveness goes. Mm-hmm. Too many guys out here, man to man. And also, when you think about it, you're on the left hash. So as a defender, you guys, the ball's on the left hash, I'm probably getting some action. Any from hash to hash is when you're going to get action. So when you watch this next or look at this next frame here, you see the under route, right? You've seen off man. That's an adjustment. It's called a sight adjustment. If you're off man, this is what we're doing. We're running. We're going to rub him off. And now they look at the communication. Linebacker, right, is man, right? He should be playing under him, right? I doubt they have what's called a banjo call. That means you play in and out. It's too far. But if they do, this corner of safety needs to be banjoing it. It's a late call. And this linebacker is at too high of a depth because he's fixated and stuck on this tight end. But this corner is at the same level. He would have to fight way over top here to make this tackle.
Oh, yeah.
But the linebacker, as you see right here, will actually try to come off right here. And it's a little bit too late right here. Mm-hmm. So you're asking a linebacker to go vertical with the tight end and come down next on this. And look where he's at.
Woo. That's tough.
And look at all this space right here. I'll get this off of there, right? Look at all this space that they want to get to, right? You're clear. Look, they're running them all off, right? There's not even no routes. They're just
999.
Yeah, right? This guy's looking at the quarterback. He should be, he's in the middle of the field. But look what's open. The abyss. Look at that. And that's what they'll get to. And that ball, he's going to catch it right here on the hash. And let me show you what's going to happen next. And now this is a pretty good linebacker to run, number 7. You don't see it here, right? But what you'll see, okay, he has a blocker in him right there. And he gone. All the way down to the 5 or 6. Look at all these jerseys chasing. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 8.
35, yeah, there's another one, yeah.
Yeah. 9 over there, all in chase position. This is the guy that makes the touchdown save and tackle.
I believe we call that being at a disadvantage.
Yeah, and it's all based on pre-snap communication, but then also a really good job to where Nebraska could take advantage of it. Backed up, you think they might bring pressure.
Where is Utah's defense similar or different to Cincinnati's, right? That looked kind of like that 4-2-5 alignment as opposed to 3-3-5 like Nebraska.
It's about the same. But it's kind of the same build. Like, you know, long athletic guys on the outside, decent. I think Cincinnati's defensive tackle, Corleone, was better. But, I mean, two bigger guys there, two really good athletic inside linebackers. I think Utah's DBs are probably a little bit better. You know what I mean? But that's kind of, I think they are a little bit more. But Cincinnati ran a lot of zone. Utah obviously runs a lot of man. Mm. But this is also
does that benefit or hurt Nebraska? I mean, I think Dylan Raiola, one of his strong suits was being really good against zone. Yeah. Nebraska still struggled to get off the ball against man.
I like Nebraska against man because TJ could, if he's healthy, can run it.
Okay, sure.
Get your back turned because look at these guys. All their backs are turned.
Well, right, yeah, here. No idea what's going on.
Yeah.
And
right?
How could they?
One guy always falling down right here. Whoop. Look at this guy right here coming out of the middle of the field. Right, because he's trying to come down. He was a safety come down. Look how wide he is. This guy cuts right across.
With a head of steam, he can outrun that other guy that's kind of by the ump in the middle there.
Yeah,
too.
So wow. It works out well. So you know there might be something that Nebraska might do. And I wanted to show you this right here, right, of this dog blitz, right. So this is the safety right here in the middle of the field, right, because he can't line up on the hash. He's got a favor towards the three man side, and you can see it right now. The ball's out. Look at these guys getting off the ball right quick. He's the only one late to the party, but this is number 8 on the dog blitz here, right? This is the tight end that's going to come up here. This is the linebacker that gets way too high on him, then has to come back down, and it doesn't work out well for him.
So in this case, a tackle is kind of checking that defensive line first outside. And then you know, leave the outside guy free until you know that inside guy's taken care of.
Well, I think that you got right here is – I think they're – he's one-on-one, right, out mm-hmm. here. Yeah. He's trying to get down. It's delayed slide protection, slide. So
gotcha.
It's like zoning it off.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, and so they don't really get a lot of pressure. Nobody wins. Nobody gets home. See, for me, since this guy is closer, this is what, real quick, this is what I would like here is an adjustment, and I don't know if somebody's an all-time blitzer or not, I would like this guy to be in coverage because he's closer to the coverage. I'd like this guy to start off here and then come on the backside here and blitz. So, but either way, they got caught, and that's a good thing for Nebraska. I'm sure Coach Dana saw it and trying to figure out a way to get Nebraska to the point that they are able to run it that way to create some space for a Barney, for a Mosey, or anyone like Keelan Smith or any of their receivers can really house call it. They've done it, and that's mm-hmm. it's. It's
Quinn Clark had that one early
Clark,
in the year.
Yeah. And so you can get some guys up the middle of the field. Now they can also do it if they're a one dog and then it's kind of like one dog blitz and they run that tunnel screen to the wide receiver as well, because that allows with the slide protections, it would allow in this case, this center to come out and block here, or it could be somebody else.
Mm.
Now, so plenty of options for Nebraska offensively and defensively. Offensively, there's the plays that we had. It's a low risk passing concept, hopefully with high returns. And then, defensively, it's quarterback run game or us, you know what I mean? So we shall see. So another whiteboard Wednesday to end the year. The Utah Utes are waiting for us in a couple weeks, and we are ready for them in actually exactly 2 weeks. And so today's 17th, we got 2 more weeks before we got a game. We're going to take a quick break. Jay Foreman, Austin Orman, Old School. We'll be right back.
Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Welcome back, Jay Foreman, Austin Orman, second 7:05 hour, fresh off of Whiteboard Wednesday on this Wednesday. I will say, Austin, we at the end of the, usually on Wednesdays, we have Bill Michener in the Lighthouse. And I will tell you, it was a Christmas shopping event yesterday. So I appreciate all the ticket listeners. As I said on the board, donating it to it, it was a phenomenal night again.
No surprise.
And Lighthouse does a really good job. Not a really good job, a great job. Bill Michener is a Lighthouse alum, Lighthouse kid, and obviously he believes in it and bleeds it, and obviously it comes out in his work. So I wanted to give a shout out to all the board members, but more importantly, everybody that donated to make a special night for some kids that have a lot of humility, man. I think it's always special when, they get, $150 and with the price of stuff right now doesn't stretch that far. And, these young men and young ladies go in there and they think about everybody but themselves, buy little brothers and sisters like a water bottle for Christmas, or buy their mom, like one of the kids bought their mom coffee mug because she works like second and third shift. So it's pretty cool. And so I want to give a shout out to them and everybody else. So appreciate you guys supporting a good cause here in Lincoln, like many other good causes. But obviously, Lighthouse sits real close to me. So I appreciate that. Also, Austin, I don't know if you saw it. There was the awards this weekend with the Heisman.
Yeah.
We hadn't talked much about it. What's your thoughts on Mendoza winning it and your boy not getting it? Then I want to ask you a third question. Jeremiah Smith, with probably the best social media post after not winning, was a Biletnikoff Award. Mm-hmm. And Lemon won it, and he declared for the draft today, the young man from USC, probably in the last 2 or 3 years. Jeremiah Smith's response.
Pretty elite.
It was pretty good. It was pretty good. Your thoughts? I want to ask you on the second question. What do you think about the Vanderbilt quarterback, his apology? Now he's finally came out with it, and his actions.
Yeah, I'm not surprised that he said what he did to begin with. Although I didn't necessarily take it as much as a direct shot, just knowing kind of who he is and who he's been. Right? He was at the committee. I don't think he was actually like personally mad at them. Or, yeah. You know, I'm sure he was disappointed to not win. I'm sure he thought he had a good season. But think about where he came from, how he's been raised, yeah. And in the way he made it up there. It's through that chip on his shoulder. It's different when you finish second, yeah. As opposed to first, like yeah. Baker Mayfield, right? So I think that was less of a personal direct attack and, oh, you know, what are you guys doing? You're stupid, you know, yeah. Loser thing. It was not smart to say it, but I think it was a young man who has told himself he needs that chip on his shoulder. His whole life, who just continued to act like that and said that. I think that was more a big picture, you know, this isn't going to get in my way. It's not going to slow me down. I still think I can have a pro career or what have yeah. You, more so than anything. It comes in pretty sharp juxtaposition from Fernando Mendoza's, you know, victory speech yeah. In the way that he talked, as emotional as he yeah. Got. And, you know, you can say everything you want about him. I think it's probably true to a degree. But I think if we would just had a normal run-of-the-mill speech from the winner, and that would have been posted, it wouldn't have made quite the waves, yeah. Except that Pavi has been in the news. And you had a legendary, for lack of a better word, yeah. Speech from Mendoza in some aspects. That juxtaposition, I think, really
yeah. Was
striking.
Yeah, it was definitely a contrast. Yeah. And, you know, Mendoza, you know, he's a quirky guy. But I think sometimes, like, you needed your quarterback to be a little quirky. Very, very focused. Obviously, family-oriented. Very unique story with him, his mom and obviously yeah. How it his brother supported him, and they both supported their mom and the sacrifices she's made, and also being overlooked. You got to think, you know, in his senior year, he didn't have any looks.
Nope.
No offers. Obviously, goes to Cal, does his thing, and rest is history.
He was a top 250 player.
Yeah.
At the quarterback position.
Yeah, at the quarterback position. And worked. There's some of the workout tapes that he believed in himself. So it's a great, you know, tool for kids to see, like, if you believe in it and you want it and you can, you know, you're steadfast in it, we'll work itself out. So, and then you can possibly, you know, make it to the heights that he's made it. And those are the stories that everybody loves. And then on the flip side, I don't think you probably want the story of the guy that, you know, got number two. You know, I think, like, you know, I look at it like this. He's been in college for 6 years.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, you know, set the path that, you know, for the JUCO, you get another year back. He knows better. I think it's probably more of an indictment on his advisors, knowing that, like, when you go to
Heisman. Or lack thereof.
Heisman ceremony, probably want to be a little bit more low-key.
Yeah.
You know, it's the first class event. You're going to be judged differently. You're not Vanderbilt and you're the mouthpiece trying to get you in the college football playoffs and you're talking your way to beating up on Tennessee and all this other stuff.
Right.
These are legendary. This is a house of legends. Yeah. You know, for him, unfortunately, he wasn't able to get through there. I think that's probably going to start to be his, I guess, tag for a while until he beats that. And I don't know how he will.
Well, he beats it by being like Baker Mayfield, right? Yes. I mean, that's kind of
he tries, but he's smaller than Baker Mayfield.
It's different from Vanderbilt versus yeah. Oklahoma, right. You know, at Texas Tech, the walk-on story. They're not the same, but I think it's a similar sort of
it's blueprint. The same. Yeah, it is. But he's at Vandy.
Yeah.
And you 5'6".
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see where he projects at the next level. I think he is a winner. I think he has, you know, some skills. I don't think he'll be at the pros. I think if he goes to Canada, he will do work. You're going to be like Doug Flutie up there. So it's always interesting to see what happens and what people, how they handle success. Now, whether, mm-hmm. You know, obviously with Dylan leaving and all that, how, you know, they are young kids and young ladies, but how they handle success is And success is different. It depends on what you view as success.
Right. I mean, I think if you had told anyone before the year, or shoot, tell someone in 2005 that Vandy's going to have a quarterback finish second in the Heisman.
After beating Alabama.
You know, holy smokes. This is incredible.
Yeah.
It can be both a success and a disappointment in the moment, right? Certainly more of a personal disappointment because, you know, no shame for a Vanderbilt quarterback in finishing second in the Heisman, except that it's not first. You can't erase that personal sting. And I think, you know, give it a week, he'll probably look back and, you know, once he's off campus, dang, that was pretty cool. What we accomplished was pretty special.
Yeah, he's had a really cool, unique story in career. I mean, he was on the pivot and they asked about his upbringing, obviously a little bit rough, you know, upbringing. And that's where he gets his, you know, both the mental and physical toughness from. You know, the story is he tried to go to Jackson State. Deion told him, like, you ain't starting over my kid, homie, so you might as well go somewhere else. Goes into Mexico State with my man Jerry Kill. Goes to Auburn, right?
And beat them up bad. Yeah.
Got their coach fired. And then next thing you know, Jerry Kill left New Mexico State to go to Vanderbilt as, like, an offensive consultant.
Yeah.
Hey, man, you want to come with? Yeah, I got nothing else better to do. And they end up beating Alabama, which will probably never happen again in our lifetime.
Did you? I saw something today. It's been like 130 years since a team has beat Alabama twice in the same
year. Yeah, I mean, so
it's crazy.
The crazy stuff going, and he said, and you know, they took the foot, you know, one of the field goal posts all the way down the main street in Nashville, and he's
right down the river.
He's in the history books. I know they had Jay Cutler and probably had some other good quarterbacks. They had Aaron Rodgers' brother, I think, but he's going to go down probably as the greatest. The greatest quarterback all the time at Vanderbilt.
Yeah, without a doubt, and right now.
Maybe one of the greatest football players.
Well, like Vanderbilt. Two seasons.
Yeah.
I mean, he's essentially their Levante David of offense.
Yeah, and he's in his star power is going to continue to grow as he continues to grow on and off the field. So, you know, he's really won a lot. And you know, it wasn't unfortunately for him not winning a Heisman. But more importantly, if he plays it right, he's really set himself up for a lifelong of, jobs and opportunities there in Nashville. And there's not a better place to do that than in Nashville, right?
Right.
Yeah. So
now the Biletnikoff, that one's interesting to me.
Man, it was. I mean, Jeremiah Smith has been the best receiver in college football since he's been a junior in high school. You know what I'm saying? He's the best last year. He's the best this year. Might not have the stats just because. That, but come on.
And that's just the thing. I mean, you know, he's the best, but is it a you know, who's going to be the best NFL receiver award, or is it who is, you know, better this year?
Yeah.
We know that Ohio State had more team success than USC. Maybe that's a feather in Smith's cap. We know that there's plenty of talented receivers both places. You still probably give the edge to Carnell Tate at Ohio State. I mean, leading the Big Ten in catches with 80 for just over 1,000 yards and 11 touchdowns. Pretty good work. Mekhi Lemon. One fewer catch, but actually ended up with, what would that end up being? 70 more yards than the same number of touchdowns. One fewer catch, 70 more yards, same number of touchdowns.
Yeah, you're wrong for that.
Can you go to team success as the argument?
Well, you can go through his supporting cast, and he's done it with a freshman receiver or quarterback.
Freshman quarterback. Was Maiava supposed to be this? You know,
he has another NFL wide receiver playing with him, Jeremiah Smith. You only had 70 more yards than him.
But on one fewer catch.
Yes.
You're a little bit more explosive for an offense that was in the top five of the sport up until the end. I'm not mad at it. I get it. Jeremiah Smith is the best player, but it's like, you know, when LeBron didn't win MVP there for a couple of years, you knew he's the best player in the sport, but he didn't have the best individual season, maybe by a hair. Yeah. Maybe you're picking nits. And it's hard to be tired of a guy college. He's only going to be there till next year. But these are snapshots,
you
right?
You got to have 400 more yards, 300 more yards.
Lemon was really good.
He is. But 70?
But on one fewer catch. That's a much bigger, you know, yards per catch. That's a full yard different in terms of yards per catch.
That's not enough for me.
And that's fine. I'm not arguing. Yeah. If he would have won it, more
both,
power
they're
to
They're both
it.
A problem.
I'm just saying, like, would I have given it to Jeremiah Smith? Probably. Yeah. But I can't be mad about it going to
Mekhi. Oh, I'm not mad
about
it, but Jeremiah Smith is mad about it.
As he should be.
So whoever Ohio State plays.
Put up 2,000 next year.
The corner that's playing against Ohio State.
Watch out.
I'm sorry for you, my brother. Everybody looking at him, too. Here's the thing. Here's the thing about that dude that's about to go against Jeremiah Smith. Everybody's going to be looking at him at practice every time he gets beat. You know what I'm saying? You don't do one-on-ones, and you know, they got to win, and then they got to go play. Oh, yeah.
You know what it reminds me of? We could be in store for? What? The Jackson Smith and Jigba 2.0 Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
I had him on my fantasy draft team. That man went 15, 347, and
yeah.
3.
Yeah.
Now, Utah was down to, like, some third-string corner running back that was playing corner or whatever. Yeah. But holy smokes, 15, 347, and 3. The second leading receiver was Marvin Harrison Jr., 6 for 71, also 3 touchdowns. Yeah.
And he's taken off ever since then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Mecca Buka had to settle for 3 for 46.
Yeah. Thanks for pulling up the rear. And he's doing work in the league. Yeah, I think whoever's playing against Ohio State, you in trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah, but all right, yeah, but the awards are, you know, look, man, it's tough. And a lot of it's tied to team success. Rodriguez won the Buckus, which is obviously he's been, that dude can play. Former quarterback. Listen, for you high school kids out there, whatever position you're playing, and if they ask you to play another one, be open to it. This guy mm-hmm. was at Virginia as a co-starting quarterback, goes to Texas Tech, played himself into a high round draft choice, and he won the Buckus, and they're on a magical run right now.
Is he Texas Tech's, like, you know,
divine? Manti Te'o.
You know, well, I was gonna say, is he like their? I don't know the best word to say. Is he what they get for Baker Mayfield leaving?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. A little payback retribution.
Yeah. But in a positive way.
Yeah, in a positive way. Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, sorry you lost this Heisman guy who's played 10 years in the NFL. Here's this kid.
And a whole bunch of money to get some other guys.
Right.
Yeah.
Here's a 4 seed.
Yeah, they got it back tenfold. And they got, yeah, so he's the real, I mean, you see a lot of kids in high school want to play the position that they played in high school. There's a lot of guys that are in the Hall of Fame that switch positions in college. Warren Sapp was a tight end. Heck. Chuck Foreman's not in the Hall of Fame. He should be. He was a tight end. He was a defensive tackle and a tight end in high school.
Hello.
Everybody was. I mean, J.J. Watt was a tight end at whatever school he started out at.
Yeah.
And then he transferred to Wisconsin and, mm-hmm. and walked on. And now, obviously, mm-hmm. he's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. You can go on and on. Marshall Faulk, you know, Nebraska and everybody else offered him to be a DB. Goes to San Diego State, running back.
Yeah.
I mean, Amir Abdullah, one of the greatest running backs in Nebraska of recent history. Alabama wanted him as a DB. Nebraska gave him a kind of a, all right, we'll let you try it running back, kind of throw you in the class, because we had, was it Hurd?
It was Aaron Green, maybe.
We had Green, Hurd, and Amir.
Yeah.
And Amir's the last guy standing. So it's not where you start, where you finish. It's, you don't get there if you have your eyes closed and your ears, or what is it, your eyes open, your ears closed.
So right.
We'll see. Anyways, we'll say a prayer for whoever the defensive back is against Jeremiah Smith, but. What we're going to do, we're going to take a quick break, come back, then we'll hand it over to Lighthouse here on a Wednesday. Jay Foreman, Austin Orman, we'll be right back.
Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Well, we're back. Quick seven, Jay Foreman, Austin Orman, before we turn it over to Lighthouse once again. LincolnLighthouse.org, we do a lot of great work, and they do it for real. And obviously last night was just obviously a byproduct of that, but a lot going on in sports. There will be football played here in 2 weeks. There will be football played next year.
Woo!
Just to let you know, we will be having signed some guys out of the portal. So it just, you know, the first two days, about a week after something like this happens, is like a big deal. Then obviously, then there'll be some other news stories, especially when Nebraska gets down to Las Vegas. It's all on the Utah.
Let's all make it the right news stories down in Las Vegas, Nebraska.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Shout out the men's basketball team. Seemed like they handled business for the most part when they were down there.
Yeah, it was good. It's good vibes down there. And it's good to have, you know, travel and stuff to do. And, you know, they'll probably do a good job of making sure there's some activities. Bowl week is always, there's some activities that you can do. They won't have them in the hustle and bustle, so they can kind of stay focused. Because
Fremont Street, not the Strip.
You don't want them on Fremont Street. You ever been to Fremont Street?
Let me try this.
Hey, man. Fremont Street. I will tell you, some of those places got good, like, eggs and hash, though. And Fremont Street was great to me when I popped in there on that 3-car poke.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Not so much for one of our compadres, but if he would have listened,
he's not on the money management plan.
Hard head makes for a soft, you know what. But 3 hours down the drain, we'll be back tomorrow, Thirsty Thursday, with Kevin Meyer, Meyer Cork and Bottle, 13th and South. Continue on as the holiday spirits. He has the sales going on wine, but we're going to turn it over to Bill Michener and the Lighthouse crew, Jay Foreman, my man, Austin Norman. We'll holler at you tomorrow.
Hey, hockey fans, can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.